The Torah tells us that Dina is attacked and violated by Shem, and it obviously affects her, it affects her parents, and nothing happens in this world that there's not some reason why people are vulnerable to things to happen. If they wouldn't be vulnerable, they wouldn't happen. So the Torah has to find a reason why Yaakov Avinu deserved, I put that words in that word in quotation marks, but why it was necessary for him to have that tsar in his life that his daughter should be attacked. Why was he vulnerable? So the Gemara says, because Lamas Mereehu Chesed, he held back a chesed from his friend. It's a pasuk in Mishlei. What does that mean? That when he met Esav, he hid Dina in a box, that Esav shouldn't see her and want her and maybe end up marrying her. And because of that, if Dina had married Esav, maybe Dina would have influenced Esav to be good. And since Yaakov deprived Esav of that possibility, that's why he was vulnerable that she should be attacked. Now, the Alter from Slabodka asked the following question. He says, is that really what Yaakov should have done? Let her marry Esav? Maybe he should do chesed with his daughter and not let her marry Esav, who may influence her. She may not influence him. Some say, you see from here, the power of a woman, that there was more chance of Dina influencing her uncle Esav than Esav influencing her. But okay. But, Maisa, that's not the way you look for a shidduch, right? You don't go to the Tel Aviv bus station and get some druggy drunk, kick him and say, wow, I have a daughter that really could influence you. Maybe you want to marry her. Right? That's not how you look for shidduch. So is that what Yaakov was supposed to do? So he says, of course not. Yaakov, on the one hand, right, should have had the possibility of marrying his daughter off to Esav. Maybe she'll influence him. On the other hand, how could he possibly let that happen? Maybe he'll influence her. So what do? You don't take a chance. So he had to put her in a box. He did 100% what he was supposed to do. You know why he was punished or why he was vulnerable? Because he knocked the nails in with a little bit too much enthusiasm. He should have basically said, I wish I could influence my brother, but I have no choice. I have to protect my daughter. So he should have, with a heavy heart, put her in a box and felt that, I really feel, bad about this because I really would like to influence my brother, but I have no choice. I have to protect my daughter. But he didn't do it with that heavy heart. He put the nails in the box to hide her with a little too much enthusiasm. And the way I understand it is, and therefore, the Rabbanu Shlom said, it wasn't so much that you were concerned about your daughter, but it was a little bit because you weren't concerned about Esav. It was lack of concern, Esav, that you hid her, not so much concern for your daughter. And therefore, Mida Keneged Mida, the Rabbanu Shlom said, if you're so concerned about your daughter, how do you not protect her and not let her go out and get attacked? Must be that your concern for her isn't as strong as you'd make it to be, and part of the reason you hid her was because deep down you weren't so concerned about Esav. That was the idea. That's what and he says, you see from here, that even if you have to do something, how you do it, what your intention is, makes a tremendous difference. Yaakov had to do what he did. He had to hide his daughter. But the feeling behind it makes a difference too. How much are you hiding her because you're concerned about her? How much is there a little bit of apathy and disconcern about Esav? He brings another case where we have the same thing. It's in this week's Sedra. Timna Haisa Pilegesh. Timna was a woman who wanted very much to join Avram Avinu's family. She came to convert and to be accepted into the family when she was a young woman by Avram, and he pushed her away with both hands. And same thing later on, she came for Yitzchak, and he pushed her away with both hands. And later, she came to Yaakov, and he pushed her away. We'll see in one second why they pushed her away. So she said, if I can't get into this family through the front door, I'm going to come through the back door. And she became a pilegish, a concubine, to Eliphaz, the son of Esav. She was a queen, a princess. She could have been a queen in some other family. She wanted very much to be in Avram's family. She realized how great this family was. In the end, because they pushed her away with both hands, we suffered because of it, because Timna and Eliphaz had a child named Amalek. And that's where Amalek came from. So the rabbis say you should never push away somebody with both hands. You bring close with the right and push away with the left, because look what happened where Amalek came from. Now that doesn't mean that the Avos obviously saw in this woman the seeds of Amalek. So they weren't going to accept her into the family. But with all of that, they should have had Rachmanis on her. Here's a woman who wants to join. Don't push her away with both hands. Push her away with the left hand. Okay, they had to push her away, but be makarv her. Don't push her away with both hands. So even though they had to do what they did, they had to push her away, but the way they did it, with the intention, made a difference. Third place he brings that we see the same idea. It says that the Jewish people, when they had to leave Har Sinai after being there for about a year, right? So the command came to leave Har Sinai. It says they ran away from Har Sinai like children running away from school. Like, enough already. No, too many mitzvahs here. So he says it doesn't mean Chas v'Shalom. The Jewish people got up and said, enough here. We have 613 mitzvahs. Who needs more? Let's run away like kids run out of school. What it means is the following. That they had a good reason to leave Har Sinai. They were going to Eretz Yisrael. They weren't going to stay there for the rest of their lives. And they wanted they should have, what's it called, the run to Eretz Yisrael. Right? But God sensed that in addition to the running to Eretz Yisrael, they were running away from Har Sinai. How so? Because when it came to Yam Suf, and they had to leave the Yam Suf, and they were gathering all the gold and silver that the Egyptians had brought and was washed up on the shore, Moshe said, God said, we have to go. And they said, another 5 minutes, another few, you know, pounds of gold. And Moshe said, I'm sorry, God said, you have to go. Until Moshe had to force them to leave. That's what should have happened at Har Sinai. Moshe should have said, God said, we have to leave Har Sinai. They should have said, another 5 minutes, maybe there'll be another mitzvah. Another 5 minutes, and Moshe should have had to force them to leave. But he didn't. They left willingly. That's called, for them, like running away from Har Sinai, like a child running from school. They didn't have to be forced to leave. And even though they had to leave, and they're on their way to Eretz Yisrael, God sensed there was a certain relief in leaving. At least they didn't have to be forced. So we see from all these cases that sometimes you have to do something. And what you're doing is proper. But how you do it, what your intention is when you're doing it, makes a tremendous difference. Now, I'm going to expound on this Alter from Slabodka, from the Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, who was known as the Saba Mislabotka, the Alter from Slabodka. He's the one who said this in the Sefer Or HaTzofim. What do we learn from here? I think you can dissect it and see it from a few different perspectives. The first one is, and there's a tremendous lesson in leading our lives, because unlike what many people think or would like to believe, this world is not black and white. There are many, many gray areas and many nuances, and nothing in life is totally good or totally bad. Since the sin of Adam and Chava, everything's a mixture. And a person has to live his life understanding that sometimes you have to see things from many different perspectives in order to do it properly, even though what you have to do is one specific thing, but how you have to feel about it and makes a difference too. So let's see what things are included. And many times there's conflicts between different feelings that are all right, but you have to do one way, but that doesn't mean that you have to totally suppress the other feelings. And I'll give you now examples of each one. First thing, it could be that sometimes you have to do something, but how you do it, what your intention is when you do it, will make a difference whether it's a mitzvah or an aveira. Same action. Give you an example. Two people get up in the morning, Shabbos morning, and they say, well, time to go to shul, and I can't wait to hear Kriyas HaTorah. I want to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah. But you know, if the Baal Kori makes a mistake, I'm going to have to correct him, because if I don't correct him, I'm not going to fulfill my mitzvah. But I hope he doesn't make any mistakes, because, you know, I wouldn't want to embarrass him, and I really want to fulfill the mitzvah, and I was hoping that he wouldn't make any mistakes. That's one person. Second person gets up, he says, well, I can't wait to get to shul. I understand my enemy is laning, reading the Torah this week, and I hope he makes mistakes so I can show him up and, you know, embarrass him publicly by correcting him. Now, the Valkyrie makes a mistake, and they both jump on him. The first one did a mitzvah. He's doing it in order to fulfill the mitzvah Kriyas HaTorah. And the second one probably has an Aveira. He's using this as an excuse to embarrass the guy. So he did the same action, but the intention is different. For one, it's a mitzvah. For one, it's an Aveira. Or another possibility. Somebody gets up in the morning, Shabbos morning, or Thursday morning, gets up and he says, "Oi, there'll be Mechal Shabbos again on Bar Ilan, and I'm going to have to go out and make a protest on Shabbos. We're going to have to protest this Chilul Shabbos. But I hope, you know, by Shabbos, that all these people who are Mechal Shabbos do tshuva, and they become frum, and I can spend my Shabbos peacefully by my Shabbos table and not have to go out in the streets to protest." Second guy gets up Thursday and says, "Oh, wow, I heard that they're more Mechalei Shabbos, and we have a good chance of going out and protesting, and it's a really, really exciting Shabbos. And I hope that more people come out to be Mechalei Shabbos, because otherwise it's going to be a very boring Shabbos." They're both going out and protesting. But one, like Reb Chaim Brisker says, there's two kinds of zealots. One is like a cat, one's like a housewife. What does that mean? If there's a mouse loose in the house, both the housewife and the cat want to get rid of that mouse. They're both zealots, right? The housewife, though, is hoping there never be any more mice, but if there's a mouse, she wants to get rid of it. The cat is hoping there'll be plenty more mice to get rid of. So a zealot who's like the cat is unfit, and the zealot who's like the housewife, that's fit. So can do the same action, same protest, but depends what your intention is. Okay. So that is one thing we can learn from this Alter from Slobodka, that what your intention is can change the action itself. Yaakov Avinu had to hide his daughter away. But was it because he was concerned about her, or was it a lack of concern about Esav? If it was out of lack of concern for Esav, it was wrong. If it was concern for her, it was right. So what he had to do, he had to do. But what was the intention behind it? What was the feeling behind it? It made a big difference if Yaakov did something wrong or he did something totally right. Second thing. Sometimes you have to do something, right? But there are two sides. Do this way, there's do this way. And the lemaisa, the weight of what's proper is on side A. But that doesn't mean that side B is totally not right. It means that in this circumstance, you can't do side B because of X, Y, and Z. And side A is the proper. But that doesn't invalidate side B completely. Let's use the example. Yaakov Avinu, marry your daughter off to Esav or hide her from Esav. Okay? So in this situation, who Esav was and who Dina was, Yaakov couldn't do side B of influencing Esav and marrying his daughter to him. He had to hide her away. Okay? But that doesn't mean there's never a situation where you can take a risk in order to influence somebody. This kind of risk, marrying your daughter off to him, maybe not. But under other circumstances, influence somebody, even though you have to talk to them, and you know you may be influenced, but that's a minor risk, and here you have a chance of really influencing somebody, maybe it's worth the risk. So even though in this situation you have to ignore side B and do side A, that doesn't mean that you should forget about side B completely. It means that you should feel bad that in this situation you couldn't do side B. You couldn't influence Esav. You should feel bad about it, right? And you should look for what's the difference? What's if you feel bad, you don't feel bad? Difference is that in this situation, I couldn't do what I really would have liked to do, but I couldn't because the circumstances didn't permit me. But when the circumstances will permit me, then I will do it. But if I don't have any feeling for it at all, I completely discount side B, then even if the circumstances are positive, I won't think of doing side B. What's an example? I'll give you two examples. Somebody who does not live in Eretz Yisrael and stays in Chutz Laretz. Now, there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. There are a lot of mitzvahs that you can do in Eretz Yisrael you can't do in Chutz Laretz. There's a mile of living in Eretz Yisrael. However, like every mitzvah, it has its parameters. And not everybody, as long as we're in Galus, has to pick up and move to Eretz Yisrael. There are circumstances that permit a person or even sometimes demand that a person stay where he is. And not come to Eretz Yisrael. He can't make a living here. It won't be good for his children. He won't find a place where he'll be able to have good education for his children because of their specific needs. Or whatever. There could be definitely circumstances that would prevent a person from having to come to live in Eretz Yisrael, or even prohibit him from living in Eretz Yisrael. But, on the other hand, living in Eretz Yisrael is a positive thing. So somebody can live in Chutz La'aretz and say, you know, I wish the circumstances would permit me to live in Eretz Yisrael. I really would love to do it, but I can't. That's one way of looking at it. Or, I have all these excuses that are legitimate to live in Chutz La'aretz. Who needs to live in Eretz Yisrael? What's the difference between them? The difference is, what happens if the circumstances will change and all of the circumstances will be positive to live in Eretz Yisrael? Would you go? If you're living here in Chutz La'aretz, knowing that you would love to live in Eretz Yisrael, but circumstances don't permit me, then if the circumstances permit, I'll go next day. But if I have no desire to go to Eretz Yisrael, right, I'm just using the circumstances as an excuse, then even if the circumstances turn around, I still won't go, because I have no desire to go. It says that Avraham Avinu was in Eretz Yisrael 5 years before Lech Lecha, on his own. And God told him to go back to Chutz La'aretz, and then 5 years later, he told him to come Lech Lecha. So the Shalach HaKadosh says, God knew he was going to tell him to come 5 years later. Why didn't he tell him to stay already? He said, because he wanted Avraham Avinu to be in Eretz Yisrael and feel how nice it was, and then to have to go back to Chutz La'aretz and for 5 years chalish and have gaguim, have tremendous desire to come back. Why? Because he wanted Avraham to create a reservoir of desire for Eretz Yisrael that Jews will be able to have when they have to be in Golis. That they'll look forward and aspire and long to be in Eretz Yisrael. Now, what that just seems to be frustrating. You can't be there, so forget about it. No. If you can't be there, at least feel that you're missing something. Feel that you would love to be there. You're longing for it. Just circumstances prevent you. The difference will be that at least you recognize what the ideal is, and also if the circumstances will change, you'll go. So even though you have to do a certain way, but there is another possibility, don't totally ignore that other possibility. Keep it as an ideal. Keep it in your mind that you would like to do that other possibility too. I can't influence Esav in this circumstance, but I really would like to influence Esav if I could, and therefore when the tip opportunity will come where it's permissible, I'll do it. Same thing over here. I would really love to live in Eretz Yisrael. Right now circumstances prohibit me, but that doesn't take away from my longing to be there, because then when circumstances will change, I'll go. So at the one hand, you can't fulfill going to Eretz Yisrael now because circumstances don't permit you, and halachically, you're not supposed to be there. But on the other hand, don't discount that completely. Leave it as an ideal. Second, another thing. A person doesn't learn Torah day and night. He works. He's koveya itim Torah. So he could look at it and say, well, this is the way it should be, and whatever. Or he can say, you know, I would love to learn Torah all the time. I just can't. I'm not cut out for it. I need to earn a living. Nobody's going to support me, and I have to work. But if Mashiach will come tomorrow, I would love to sit and learn all day. So at the same time that you have to function this way, realize that there's another side, and at least recognize that there's something positive about it. So then if the circumstances change, at least you want to do that. Same idea. Another idea, another situation would be where a person wants to go out and influence the world. But I can't do that, because if I do that, I'm endangering myself. I can't go live in Yehupitzville somewhere and who knows what's going to be with my children and my Yiddishkeit. So I have to stay, perhaps, in a good, strong environment, because I'm not strong enough, you know, to be in a weak environment. But I really would like to influence these people. So I feel bad about the fact that I can't influence them. At the same time, I know that I'm not allowed to do it. So what difference does it make? So then forget about it. You can't do it. Forget about it. No. Because if you have that still desire, I would love to do it, but I can't. Then when the circumstances will come and you could go somewhere where you won't be putting yourself in a bad environment and you'll be able to influence people around you, you'll do it. But if you discount it completely and you only see that one side, which you have to do, and you discount the other side completely, you'll never come to influence people. Another thing we learn from here. Sometimes, what's it called, you have two possibilities of what to do in life. And neither one is perfect. Each one has ups and downs, right? Positive and negative, okay? and pros and cons. And there's no real way of deciding what to do. So then sometimes what the halachic way of doing is don't do anything. Shevi al tase. Okay? In other words, like by Yaakov, I can put my daughter in Esav's face, marry and make a shidduch. That's one positive thing. Or I can take my daughter and send her away somewhere. Right? Neither one is clear which is proper. So what do? Don't do anything. So you put her in a box and hide her. That's all. Not because putting her in the box and hiding her is the proper thing to do. It's because we don't know what the proper thing to do is. So when you don't know what to do, you don't do. You don't do something on a doubt. You just don't do it. You don't act. You become inactive. Yaakov Avinu, his sin was that he did it proactively when he put her in the box. He didn't do it as, I don't know to do this or do this, and therefore I don't do anything. But he was too proactive in the side of hiding her. Okay, Mamela, the thing is like this. We have this in this week's Sedra too. And in the beginning of the Sedra, it says that Yaakov Avinu sends angels or sends emissaries to confront Esav. And the Medrash says that was not the proper thing to do. Because it says in Mishlei, a person who gets involved in a fight that's not his, he mixes his head, where he looks for trouble, mixes his head in an argument that's not his, he gets involved in stuff that's not his business. He's like pulling a dog's ears. Why do you have to pull the dog's ears? Just tiptoe around, the dog won't bother you. You go pull the dog's ears, you're looking for trouble. So meaning, don't look for trouble. Don't look for problems. Why do you have to confront Esav? Don't look for tzaras. You could have tiptoed and quietly come back to Eretz Yisrael and hope that Esav wouldn't know. Why are you looking for trouble? And yet, later on it says that Yaakov Avinu puts his family safely on the other side of Mavre Yabok, on the other side of this brook, and he runs away. And the Rashbam says he was trying to run away and not confront Esav. He knew that Esav didn't want to hurt his family, just him. So he left his family safe, and he decided he's going to run away and avoid confronting Esav. And an angel came, not Esav's angel, but according to the Rashbam, Yaakov's angel came and said, you have to face the situation. You can't run away. Now that seems to be contradictory. On the one hand, we fault Yaakov for confronting Esav. And then when he wants to run away and not confront him, we fault him again. Which is it? The answer, I think, there's other answers. But I think the answer is, to confront Esav, there are reasons to do it. Not to confront him, to run away, reasons to do that. What do? Nothing. Just remain inactive. Don't send emissaries and don't run away. You can't be proactive. In that kind of situation, just don't do. But the what is proper to do could be this, could be that, we don't know. So don't do either, just don't do anything. But if you are proactive in confronting or proactive in running away, that's doing something, that's wrong. Sometimes you have to deal with the situation because you don't know which is the right way. Influence Esav, marry my daughter off. Not influence him and say and protect my daughter. I don't know what to do. So don't do anything. Leave it status quo. But once you do either proactive way, you put her away too much to hide her actively, or you actively get Esav interested in her, that's wrong. So that also we can learn from here. Sometimes in life, there are two possibilities. Neither one is clear which one to do. And then what you're supposed to do is just be inactive. Don't do anything. And then if you do one or the other too much actively, you're doing the wrong thing. Another possibility is, from learning from this, is the following. Sometimes the reality of the situation is that you have to function in a certain way. Okay? For instance, let's say you have a neighbor that is really not 100% all there, and they are very much of a nudge, and they constantly are asking you for loans and help and borrow this and borrow that, and having rachmanis on them is not the proper thing, because you're just feeding their inability to take responsibility for themselves, right? They don't get a job, so they keep bothering you to give them handouts or whatever, and they won't accept responsibility for anything. And if you're going to feed this, you're going to hurt them. So you have to be a little cruel and say, no, I'm not loaning you the money, I'm not giving you anything, and I'm not giving you things to borrow. And then they'll be forced to take responsibility and to go get a job or whatever. So on the one hand, you're forced because of the situation to be what appears to be cruel, but it's really for the person's best interest. At the same time, you have to realize that it's nice to be merciful. I wish I could be merciful to the person, but mercy in this situation is misplaced. But that doesn't mean that you should totally be cruel to the person and inside not feel bad that you can't have mercy. In other words, my mercy is not going to make me give the guy the money. I'm not going to give him the money. In the action, I'm going to have to be cruel. But in my heart, I feel bad that I can't give him the money, that I have to be cruel to him. What's the difference? The difference is that on the one hand, the action really is a function of I care for that person. And because I care for him, I'm going to have to act to him cruel. But I shouldn't feel that being cruel is a positive thing. I really don't want to be cruel. I really would love to have mercy on the person and give him the money. But since I know it's not good for him, I have to suppress that. But I shouldn't lose that feeling inside of that mercy is a good feeling. And being cruel is not such a good feeling. In this situation, I have to act in a cruel way. But I should keep inside the same thing with Yaakov and Esau. I have to be cruel to my brother and hold back what could be a kindness of marrying my daughter to him. I can't do that. I can't do that to my daughter. But at least feel bad that you can't influence him. Feel bad that you would like to influence him. You don't lose that feeling and become oblivious to it. And if Yaakov Avinu put the nails in with too much enthusiasm, that means that to a certain degree he just suppressed that feeling of wanting to do a kindness to Esau completely. That's not proper. I want to do the kindness. I can't. I'm not allowed. But the feeling of wanting to influence somebody, wanting to help somebody, should still be there. It shouldn't erase that feeling. It should just suppress it because in this situation, I can't let it come to the surface. But it's there. That's another aspect of this. Sometimes, another way of looking at this, sometimes there's an ideal. And the ideal, in an ideal world, I would love to marry my daughter off to Esav and influence it. But we don't live in an ideal world, and it's possible that Esav will influence my daughter. So under the circumstance, I can't let her marry. But the ideal, I still realize, would be to be able to marry off, and he shouldn't influence her. That I shouldn't lose sight of the fact that what I'm doing is less than the ideal. The ideal would be, in a perfect world, both could be done. Influence him, and he won't influence her. But we don't live in an ideal world, and there's always a possibility he'll influence her, so I have to do what's less than the ideal. But I should realize it's less than the ideal. That doesn't become the ideal. You know where we have this idea? In Germany, where the religious level was very low before World War II, even before World War I, Germany was known to be, as opposed to Eastern Europe, where Polish and Hasidic and Litvish, the very strong Yiddishkeit, Germany was more reform, liberal, Yiddishkeit was very weak. So there, in order to influence the children, the Gedolim permitted them to have mixed youth groups. But it was like Bidyevit, right, because they wouldn't come to a separate youth group. So, and in America too, there are youth groups that are mixed, but because Gedolim said that you're reaching out to public school children who won't come to all boy groups or all girl groups. And if you're going to have, you're not going to be able to influence them, so you can have, with certain limitations, you can have mixed groups. So if you understand, that's not the ideal. The ideal would be to have separate groups. But we don't live in an ideal world, and under the circumstances, this is okay as a bidyevit, right, as less than the ideal. Then when the circumstances change, you'll realize that this is not the ideal. And you'll also realize that this is, you know, only a stopgap measure. And you'll try to control it and minimize the dangers. What happened is some people took that and turned it around and said, no, it's ideal to have mixed groups. And we want to have mixed, and it's healthy to have boys and girls together. And then it becomes the ideal, and then it totally gets lost because then you don't control it, and you think that that's so. You don't ever turn what is mutter b'di'evid under difficult situations and all of a sudden turn into the ideal. Remember what the ideal is. Remember that you have to function like this because we don't live in an ideal world. That's one example. And in those places where they made the youth movement, all of a sudden the ideal became to be mixed groups. Then the nature of those groups became very, very questionable halachically. When they understood that it was something they did because never, we can't do what's really right. We're going to have to compromise. When it was a compromise, then you dealt with it as a compromise. When you think it's the ideal, then there's nothing to control or to compromise on, and you never change it, even if you could change it. And therefore, all of this is very important to remember, whether you're functioning for yourself, you're functioning in a community, right? How to look at people also, and how to deal in organizations, in schools, or whatever. All of these things take effect. Sometimes you have to do one way, but you have to realize that the ideal is a different way, that there's you have to do it, but have the right intention. All the things that we mentioned are very important in your own behavior, in your behavior towards others, in how you look at other people. Recognize that they maybe sometimes have to do something, right? But don't judge them harshly because they did something that you think is not proper, because maybe under the circumstances that's what they had to do. And maybe inside they feel differently, right? And they also understand that maybe this is not the ideal, but that's what you have to do. So you always have to, it says, Na'aseh cheshbono shel olam. You always have to make the larger picture and take in all the considerations and all the circumstances and all the pros and all the cons. Nothing is black and white. That you can ever judge somebody or what they did just so simply, right or wrong. Look at all the picture. And that's why it says, cheshbono shel olam means always calculate the benefit you'll have from a mitzvah opposite its loss, and the loss you'll have from an aveira opposite its gain. What does that mean? It means you can't just look and say, well, mitzvahs are all positive and just do them, and aveiras are negative and don't do them. No. There's downside on mitzvahs too, and you have to take that sometimes into consideration. That doesn't mean necessarily you don't do the mitzvah, but at least you try to minimize the negative part. Sometimes there's a benefit from an aveira. That doesn't mean you do the aveira, but it means at least don't discount the benefit and don't do the aveira, but try to get that benefit a different way. Don't look at things black and white. There is positive things in negative, and there's negative things in positive. Take them into consideration, and that'll make a difference in how you do the positive with certain compromises histaigut. I even say that histaigiot. Things that we're not sure about, that we have to hold back on. There's a word for it. I can't think of it now. In any case, so that's the lesson, I think, from this Alter from Slabodka. All of these things, that nothing in this world is black and white. And even if you have to do something, what you think, how you think, what behind the scenes, what you understand that the other side could have been and you would like it to be, but you know you can't do it in an actual way. All the things that we mentioned are very important to take in consideration when making decisions in life. And doing things according to those decisions, it's never monolithic. It's never either this or that. It's a lot of times a combination of many things, and you have to function on many levels. You have to function on the physical, actual level, and then you have to function on the emotional level. And sometimes they're not the same. Sometimes what you feel emotionally is not what you're actually doing, because you have to do this, but you have to feel a little bit differently. That's the lesson, I think. And we should hope for the day when the world will be a perfect world, and we'll be able to do the ideal, and there won't be, everything will be black and white, and then when Mashiach comes, we won't have to worry about all these things.